national championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. And you guys are listening to the Hornscast. This week we're going to be getting into a bunch of different topics, mainly focusing on recruiting here. As we get into the heat wave that happened last week, where Texas had a bunch of top recruits in town. Let's talk about some of the main storylines and Texas getting a commitment in Keaton Crawford, the cornerback out of John Tyler in East Texas. They get into the opening that is happening this coming weekend. Who's going? What are some of the notable names? And what are we going to be looking for? What are the videos you should be looking for online? And then we're going to get into this Fair Pay to Play Act coming out of the California Senate, because personally I think it's interesting and I think it has a lot of implications for the future of college football. So Joe, let's get into it, man. But actually, before we get into all of this, something that just happened tonight when we were recording, Terry Bradshaw, man. Okay, so one, I didn't know Terry Bradshaw was an alum of Louisiana Tech. So, One, there. Two, he's the only guy who I've seen whose blood alcohol level rivals that of Brett Hull. I don't know if he's geriatric or if he's drunk, but everything he said in this clip where he goes after Sam Ehlinger is just unmistakably incorrect.
Yeah, so in the past 2 weeks, not only has a Heisman-winning current NFL starter gone after Sam Ehlinger, but also a Hall of Fame Super Bowl-winning Fox Sports analyst has gone after Sam Ehlinger. I think Gil Brandt, the old Cowboys front office member, had one of the best comebacks ever. If you spotted Terry, the S and the M in Sam in order to spell it, probably still couldn't get it. I kind of think that I don't know. I mean, I know Terry Bradshaw. He's paid to be a Fox Sports analyst. Like, he's not an idiot. He wouldn't be on Fox Sports week in and week out giving his takes on NFL football if he didn't know a little bit about football. I mostly think this is Louisiana Tech fan, Louisiana Tech alum Terry Bradshaw, talking about Louisiana Tech's first opponent of the season. Yeah, there's probably some ignorance. Probably a lot of ignorance. But I think one of the main motivations there definitely was him being a Louisiana Tech alum. And even if it wasn't, it's a misguided, commonly held misguided opinion on Sam Ehlinger kind of as a fullback who can't really run or actually who can't really pass at all. And, you know, it's just kind of a system quarterback there to be a battering ram. I think it's misguided. I think him referring to Texas's quarterback room, including three who have left. Didn't he say three left when the answer is only one? I think that's
two.
Or he got the facts wrong. And then he also started calling them 5A quarterbacks. And Bob Ballou, who posted that video that everybody's seen, he's like, no, when he said 5A, he meant five star. You know, no offense, but Casey Thompson, Cam Rising, Rashawn Johnson, Hudson Card, Sam Ehlinger, Shane Buechele, none of them were five-star quarterbacks.
Five-star quarterback Texas got was Garrett Gilbert, who
and we know
did
how
win
it,
a Super Bowl champion.
Super Bowl champion Garrett Gilbert.
Exactly.
So it's basically just, it's a misinformed talking point thing by a Louisiana Tech grad talking about the quarterback for Louisiana Tech's first opponent. I mean, if you even look past his suspenders, he's got a Louisiana Tech backdrop, I believe, in that video. So he definitely seemed to be playing to the crowd. I think we can all be pretty sure that Sam Ehlinger is going to prove that whatever assumptions Terry Bradshaw had about him were wrong when they faced Louisiana Tech. Louisiana Tech's not just some run-of-the-mill directional school, but they're not Texas. And although that almost came back to bite them last year against Tulsa, doesn't seem like it's going to happen this year.
You're right. One of the misguided talking points about Sam Ehlinger is that he's an average quarterback. And hell, if 41 touchdowns and 5 interceptions over an entire year is average, give me all of the average quarterbacks. Give me every single average quarterback you got, because I want all of them. But On top of that, Terry Bradshaw didn't just, you know, go after Texas. He helped Texas in a way. Texas's fatal flaw over the past few years has been overlooking that one or two or three opponents like Maryland or Tulsa or Oklahoma State. And, well, you know, it's you don't get much better bulletin board material than what Terry Bradshaw just gave to Sam Ellinger, do you?
No, not at all. And, you know, Sam Ellinger is not the type of kid or not the type of player who seems to need this type of thing. But I think it's also very evident he thrives off of this type of thing, whether it's a fellow player or, you know, another coach telling it to him. He likes being told he's not good enough and then going out and proving him wrong. And at least last year he was able to do that 80% of the time, probably north of that. So I'm not sure why Louisiana Tech, of all schools, would try to pick a fight. They're, like I mentioned, they're not any sort of pushover. They're a quality G5 team, and they even gave LSU some fits last year. But this is a team with Texas, with you know, the level of talent that Texas has, even primarily at quarterback, should be good enough to beat the Louisiana Techs in everywhere, those types of schools of the world. Improve the Terry Bradshaws and, as Tom Herman likes to find, the doubters of Texas football wrong.
Yeah. Again, Louisiana Tech was a team that, you know, could have surprised Texas, but when you give them bulletin board material like this, it's going to be hard to surprise a team. But moving on, because honestly, it's a small story. It's just really funny that Terry Bradshaw decided to do that. Just a funny note to end the day on a Thursday. Let's go on to the heat wave, which was a really big deal for Texas. It's a big deal every year, as Texas usually gets a lot of their top prospects from even out of the state in to party in the pool with a bunch of their players and with their coaches and right before the dead period. So let's get into that. Texas had a number of official visitors. They had Keaton Crawford. They had Bryson Washington. They had Bijan Robinson. They had a bunch of dudes there who were really big targets, and they got one to commit on the weekend. And Keaton Crawford, Joe, Keaton Crawford was one of my favorite defensive backs in this class, and I think really an underrated dude who I am expecting to get a ratings bump because I think he's so versatile. I can see him playing at nickelback. I mean, I've been saying this before. He committed before. Mm-hmm. He was a huge target for Texas. He can play nickelback, he can play outside, he can play to the boundary field. Wherever you put this kid, he's going to succeed.
Yeah, not only are you getting a kid from a high school that's been very generous to Texas over the course of its history in John Tyler High School, but you're getting a phenomenal athlete. My familiarity with Keaton Crawford, I watched him run track before I even watched a snap of his football film. I know he was on Texas's radar before he showed up at events like the Texas Relays and the UIL State Meet, but that was my first interaction with him. And, you know, the first thing I got to see him do, or one of the things I got to see him do, was run a 10.600. That's really good. It was overshadowed by Tyler Owens. It was overshadowed by Matthew Bowling, but 10.6 for a high schooler is really damn good.
Yeah, that's really good.
took the time to watch his film, and you know, there's some things he's lacking in the refinement portion of his game. But, you know, a point that Eric Nalin over at Inside Texas has made and that I've built on is that Eric argues that, you know, this is a top 100 player in the country type player. And I've started to think, you know, if Tyler Owens at, you know, 6'2", 6'3", 200 something pounds, running a 10.2, if he's a five-star player, and it makes a lot of sense for Keaton Crawford to be a top 100 player at about 5'11", 6 foot, you know, just south of 200 pounds and running these types of speeds. Yeah. Not only that, but you've also got, you know, following a class where you had kind of one of each where, you know, you had Kenyatta Watson, who's got, great refined skills, maybe not ball skills, but pretty much solid at everything else, and a really raw player who's got multiple, position versatility with Marcus Caldwell. You got to get a guy like, you know, you have the luxury of being able to take a guy like Keaton Crawford, who's got solid measurables for the corner position that you want at Texas and has phenomenal athleticism. If Jason Washington, who's proven pretty darn good as a coach, can add skill to what Keaton Crawford's able to do. This is a guy who could be just a phenomenal athlete, sticking with receivers right on their hips. If he learns the ins and outs, like hand placement, you know, reading hips, reading hands of receivers, that type of thing, he could be real special. But he doesn't have to be real special really early. And that's the type of depth championship programs need. And that's the type of depth that Texas is starting to get in the secondary. And I think this commitment just kind of proves that.
And not just depth, but athleticism. Keaton Crawford is, as you said, with that 10.6 100, is a top athlete. That dude can do so much and go side to side on that field in a blink of an eye. I was very impressed with him keeping up with guys like Ty Jordan, who is just a spark plug as an athlete. That dude is one of the fastest guys I've seen at the running back position. And Keaton Crawford is one of the guys at the, I believe it was Dallas Under Armour, that was able to keep up with him. So this guy is a crazy athlete. And I'll put a little disclaimer on this. I'm not usually the best at saying, oh yeah, this guy, it has the exact same skill sets as a former player. Mm-hmm. But Keaton Crawford reminds me of Quandre Diggs. Does that ring true to you? What do you think?
Yeah, I see where you're coming at.
You're doing the little head swim.
The thing with Quandre Diggs is that he was, and I think he would still tell you this today, he's a little bit limited by his size. You know, he may be 200 pounds, but he was still 5'9". And if you remember a few years ago, Josh Doctson took advantage of that very often. But he's kind of the same, very similar in that, you know, he's on a high school team that asks him to do a lot for that team. He plays both ways. If you remember, Quandre Diggs played quarterback for Angleton,
yeah,
I believe.
That's his current Twitter profile picture. playing quarterback. I was like, what?
So that's a class. Quandre could have played, you know, he was a great nickel, but he also definitely could have played corner on the outside as long as he wasn't going against 6'5 receivers. Keaton's kind of the same way. He could definitely slide inside to nickel. He could do a lot of, you know, what's asked there. He could definitely just stay on the outside and be fine there. So I don't think it's a like for like comparison, you know, just kind of putting them over each other and having complete overlap. But I think there's some similarities there. They're very good athletes who maybe a little raw at the position and are going to have time to learn, and their baseline athleticism, it's going to make it easy for them to overcome any obstacle that they'll have learning the skills, because they'll have that, like I mentioned, that baseline athleticism to make up for any problems they have.
So, Joe, where exactly do you think Keaton Crawford ends up? Because honestly, as I've said, he can play pretty much anywhere. I think Texas is looking at him as that nickelback position. What do you think?
Right now, I mean, right at 6 foot, right at 200, I think you want to develop him into the type of athlete that sticks at corner. I think you've got the type of players that you want, kind of in the hopper to become a nickel. You got guys like Chris Adamora, possibly Marcus Caldwell, but he gives you that positional versatility. You know, you've got Josh Thompson. Probably have B.J. Foster there. So I think the position's pretty healthy right now to where he can definitely stick at corner, learn that position there, and stick there before you try to get, you know, too much on him. Because remember, like I mentioned, this is a guy playing both sides of the ball for John Tyler, for Ricklin Holmes, and for that program that asks so much of their players and has super high expectations. So I think you may be better served, you know, even if he has kind of that athleticism required for the nickel position at Texas, it may not be the worst idea to keep him at corner if you know that he's just going to become this type of guy that can stick with the hips, become, you know, one of those players who gets that sticky, you know, tag to him, guy who just stays on receivers and can go wherever they go. And I think that may be the best option, especially if you've not only Todd Orlando, but Craig Nivar feel that they have better options to play nickel available, outstanding in this class.
Right. While this recruitment and this commitment might not be as sexy as it, some of the other guys in the class, as it would be later on in the cycle when I think he gets that deserving recruitment bump in the stats and by the services, whatever, I think this guy is going to be somebody who actually plays at Texas. He's really impressed me while I've seen him in different camp settings and watched his film and watched him play. He's impressive, and I think Longhorn fans should be, you know, very happy, should be very happy with what they've gotten out of Keaton Crawford in that commitment by the Texas staff, along with another commitment to be named later. So let's talk about some of the bigger names that came to the heat wave. We'll start off actually with some of the guys who didn't show up. Keely Ringo and Lantham Ransom. Two big defensive backs that Texas is going after. Lantham Ransom I'm less hyped about, as people are kind of hinting that he's going to Ohio State. But Keely Ringo missing out, that's not a great thing for Texas, as he has found out that, hey, maybe his net worth is worth going around and say, hey, let's take a look at what other schools want to talk to me here.
Yeah, yeah. After, you know, everybody became very enamored with Keely Ringo, especially when they A, realized that Bryant Westbrook, former UT grad, was one of his coaches at Saguaro, and B, after he stayed on campus for a week, rightfully so, you know, and then I think reality set in that there's going to be a dogfight for probably the best corner prospect in the country, mm-hmm. and arguably the best prospect in the country. Texas Death still, you know, despite not getting him on campus, still made his top five along with Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, and Oregon. So they're still remaining in this recruitment, as, and, you know, he's
likely
definitely
to get that official visit.
Right. And he's definitely, the type of player that you always leave a spot open until National Signing Day. He is that right. special, or you make room for him on National Signing Day, one way or the other. But definitely not getting him in on, you know, this big heat wave event to where, you know, there's a lot of bonding between players, coaches, recruits, that type of thing. Non-football visit, not getting him in there at all. And correct me if I'm wrong, still not getting him in since that week-long visit doesn't bode particularly well for Texas, but still getting him, still making his top five, still making probably, like you mentioned, getting an official visit. Texas is going to remain in this recruitment, but there's plenty of obstacles to be overcome, and you know, depth for a guy like Keely Ringo should not be one of them. I don't think it will be one of them, but this is going to be a tough recruitment when you're battling for one of the best players in the country, period. You're going to have to go against the best programs in the country. And so far, that's not been a task that Texas has handled particularly awesome. They've mm-hmm. definitely won their fair share. But for the guys like this who are, you know, not Texas leans, aren't from Texas, don't have any connection, like real connection to Texas, except for maybe a high school coach. And, you know, most good high school coaches don't try to sway one way or another where those kids go. This is going to be an incredibly tough recruitment for Texas to win and come out on top with a signature in the end.
Yeah. It really is pointing, you know, all signs are pointing towards the Dogs, who Texas just barely beat in that Sugar Bowl, just barely, just by a hair. But we'll see. It's not over yet. This probably is going to go well into the season, and Texas still has an official visit, as I said. We'll see what happens. Keely Ringo could fall back in love with the Longhorns. The Longhorns got Tim Beck on their side. They got Bryant Westbrook on their side. Keely Ringo has come here. He's loved it before. We'll see what happens here. But not getting him in for the heat wave, not great news. Some good news, though. Johnny Wilson pulled the Keely Ringo and stayed well after he was supposed to leave. Johnny Wilson is his second time here in, 3 weeks? He's been here for, I believe, somewhere around 6 to 10 days over the span of that 21-day period. He has fallen in love with the city of Austin. He's, you know, when I spoke with him, he glowed about the Longhorn staff. He loved, you know, talking to the players, like guys like DeGabriel Floyd, who is just the gift that keeps on giving. He was talking about Jordan Whittington and other five-star prospects. Some of the wide receivers that he was talking about were some guys he was really focused on, because this dude's 6'6", 220, going into his senior year. And in my article, I said, I kind of put into perspective, Colin Johnson was 6'6", 200 when he left high school. So this is a big dude. And Texas luckily has the bevy of big wide receivers to pull from and say, hey, look, Wilson, you can play like this kid over here or this kid over here or this kid over here or this kid over here and succeed, which, you know, has kind of been a problem for some of the bigger, taller wide receivers as the game moves towards more athletic wide receivers.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you're Julio Jones, who can run like a 4.6 or 4.5 even while being 6'4", 220. Being 6'4", 220 isn't all it's made up to be in the modern NFL, and that's where a lot of kids, priorities lie. However, in the college game, it serves a damn good purpose, as Oklahoma learned in the Big 12 title game, as USC learned in 2017, and as most teams learned last year when Colin Johnson had a big game. So Johnny Wilson definitely can. I mean, I'm sure the coaches have hammered home the fact that, like, hey, you see, you know, what number nine's doing over here. You just throw on that number one and do it, you know, just be his successor. So Texas has a phenomenal pitch to him at the college level. It seems as if Oregon and Texas are the two standing out for him right now. It's peculiar, I guess, but very understandable, but there are no California teams really hotly in his recruitment, or at least don't seem to be within that top group. It just kind of seems to be Oregon and Texas right now. And this is going to be another one to where Drew Maringer is going to have to show, you know, that he can win these battles. He's done it before, definitely. He kind of won a battle with Brew McCoy, kind of, sort of, maybe. We'll just throw that out the window. but definitely has won battles, like, for guys like Marcus Washington, and he can definitely win recruiting battles, you know, all over the country. This is just going to have to be another one that he wins and that Texas goes the distance with Oregon, who, you know, with Justin Herbert this year, should have a solid sell for wide receivers, with Mario Cristobal in that program still having a lot of momentum and trying to dethrone Washington, like Texas is trying to dethrone Oklahoma. You know, very similar statures in program right now, decently new head coaches. So Texas is going to have to prove its worth against Oregon and go, like I mentioned, go the distance in this recruitment, try to maintain that California pipeline and, you know, see if they can end up with pulling another five-star from there with the power vacuum that is Stanford, Cal, USC, and UCLA not being as good as they have been in recent years.
Yeah, it's going to come down to the wire for Johnny Wilson. And I'm sure Oregon's going to find some way to figure out how to get back into the lead here, but Texas still has Johnny Wilson's official visit to go, just like Keely Ringo's. It's likely going to come during the season. Again, you got to look at that LSU game and think about how important that is going to be for Texas to win for the recruiting game, because if they win and they can show, hey, they got that dominance of the SEC, a bunch of these guys are going to come back and say, maybe Texas is a place where they don't just barely beat Georgia. They don't just barely beat these teams they need to beat. They're pretty dominant. And
I just want to touch on that. I mean, you mentioned that this was all unofficial. Texas making sure that they could, you know, get him in June without having to spend an official visit on him, without, you know, the possibility that he can't make it back for an unofficial, for anything like that. Being able to have that still in their back pocket as this recruitment continues throughout the course of the summer and fall. Texas making sure that this was an unofficial visit as opposed to official, keeping that official, like you mentioned, possibly for the LSU game or any other game he can make in the fall. Definitely a smart move by Texas. You know, we've seen how, you know, I guess shooting your shot early can have its positive benefits, but at the same time, there's a reason that the NCAA 14 football game gave you more bonus points for having the latest official visit. I'm not saying that's what Texas is going to do in this situation, but saving that official visit to where closer to his decision time, you're going to have another chance to crack at him, get him on campus, not have any other distractions except for Texas football. That's definitely a positive. And then, you know, the fact that they just had him on campus in general, this past week was definitely a positive. So definitely handling this recruitment as well as they can right now, just have to beat Oregon for his signature.
Right. And the other five-star that got on campus, Bijan Robinson, who, I mean, you don't want to call him a consolation for Zach Evans, even though he kind of is. But the dude is legit if you've seen any video of him from the Rivals camp, and we'll see more from the opening. But that dude's change of direction is absolutely jaw-dropping. So I'm not – it's not a that bad of a consolation prize.
Yeah.
Getting him on campus for that official visit really helped Texas out here.
Yeah, I remember Ian Boyd diagrammed a play of his where he basically runs straight at a guy basically playing a nine technique and cuts it back through the A-gap and just finds the opposite pylon. Like, it's wow. It's a crazy move. And I believe it was a state championship game, too, in Arizona. So you can think whatever you think about South Point Catholic's competition, but you're not playing scrubs when you get to the state title game. And for him to be able to do that was very impressive. Media wasn't able to talk with him because he was on his official visit, but they were able to see him on the golf cart, giving a lot of smiles as he was paraded through and around the facilities and around campus. And, you know, Texas is going against some big time recruiting opponents, especially for a kid from Arizona. You've got USC, which no matter what you think of USC, no matter what Texas did last year, still a strong program. Ohio State, even under Ryan Day and not Urban Meyer, which is the major differentiator, that's still a program that's constantly going to be in the Big Ten title conversation and the national conversations. And then Texas, who's trying to make headway into Arizona with guys like Jake Smith and Braden Leibrock. So, you know, he's definitely got a tough decision ahead of him. But Texas having the last official visit seems to be a good sign. It's going to be a tough one to win, especially, you know, throughout the dead period. And as this decision comes up probably sometime this summer, but if I think Texas gave as best a shot they could, this recruitment, on the official visit, and, you know, just has to hope that keep cracking away and keep working on it, and that the last word will be the best word and get his signature. But, I don't think there's any guarantee of that right now.
No, there was some rumors out there that Ohio State might have taken the lead here, but when I went and checked around, that seemed pretty unfounded, and I really think Texas put themselves in a pretty good spot here. And speaking of that, Bryson Washington, the guy out of C.E. King, the safety, in this class, I believe there's two safeties Texas really is going after. That is Chris Thompson and Bryson Washington. And if you wanted to look at a sort of the same duo, go back to two years ago. Man, it's already been 2 years since that class of B.J. Foster and Caden Stearns. And that safety duo is kind of similar thing here. Bryson Washington's your B.J. Foster and Chris Thompson is Caden Stearns. So Bryson Washington has made it very clear that it's going to be a Red River shootout battle for him. And Texas has done a fantastic job of kind of steering this right back around into their side with this official visit.
Yeah, this is, like I mentioned, NCAA 14. This is how I shape my recruiting landscape. And how
that's
my
how we learned at a young age.
I mean, you got to spend those points somehow.
It's
time dedication, time appropriation, I guess you can say. But still, that point remains. Getting that last crack, getting that last official visit is always a positive data point. And also getting that unofficial visit a couple weeks ago where he was able to spend some time out on Lake Travis and spend some time with the players. This is a tough battle. I mean, you've got Texas arguing not only you're going to have a clear spot, you're going to have a solid coach with Craig Nybar, you're coming to DBU, but Oklahoma is that right there countering. They've got, you know, new generation, new coach with Grinch. You know, you mentioned B.J. Foster and Caden Stearns. It's hard to think that Oklahoma's and definitely other schools, maybe not in the Bryson Washington situation, but specifically Oklahoma in this case, aren't using Caden Stearns and B.J. Foster being there to help them try and get Bryson Washington's signature. So this is just going to basically, you know, this is going to be one of the more hard fought battles between Oklahoma and Texas this cycle. And this is going to be a really tough recruitment to win just because of how hard, like I mentioned, just because of how hard fought it is, because of the pitches that are being thrown around and because of how hardly he's being recruited. This is the guy who ran, you know, 4-3, or we all saw Keely Ringo's numbers at the Rivals 5-Star Challenge, that 4-3 and 4-3 back-to-back, even with calf cramps, apparently. Bryson Washington, I believe, ran a 4.55, so he's arguably one of the best safety in the state, according to some people. I can definitely see an argument for that, and you know, there's a reason it's tough to win recruitments for the best safety in the state. So many people want to get him, and plenty of schools have strong pitches in order to get him. And, you know, probably July 4th, we'll find out who had the pitch that resonated with Bryson most.
Right. We'll see. We'll see. It's going to come down to the wire, and boy, Texas could really use this one, honestly, getting some momentum on their side. Besides the Keaton Crawford one, they need some momentum. Speaking of that, they could have really used some more momentum going into this next weekend with the opening going on in Dallas, in the Ford Center, in the Star, in Frisco. So, speaking of that, who's going? You got Texas commits, Jake Majors, Logan Parr, and Hudson Card. Well, three great commits, three great guys, not the guys, I mean, it's not a strong posse to really start to try to turn some guys to the Longhorns like Vernon Broughton or Justin Flo or Jonathan Jackson or, you know, whoever's out there who's going to the opening.
Right, exactly. In a situation like this, where this is probably the biggest gathering of the top high school talent across the country, even bigger than the Under Armour game, even bigger than the All-American Bowl, Army, Adidas, whatever it is in San Antonio, this is probably the biggest gathering of high school talent across the country. And this isn't to say that Jake Majors, Logan Parr, Hudson Card are bad players, because they're not.
No, they're not.
They're very, very good players, and they're highly rated in going to this event for a reason. But in the context of the talent that's going to this event, they're not, you know, super, you know, big personalities
that
people from around the country. Yeah, they're not these huge personalities that people from around the country know. As far as talent level, I mean, I'm as big a believer in Hudson Card as there might be. I had these lofty expectations and thoughts that he might go 3,500 and 1,000 last season, and that was a few hundred yards short on both sides of the spectrum. But, you know, he's definitely a good player. But, you know, when you're surrounded by some of the best in the country, it's hard to stand out. And that might be the case for the Texas commits this year, and especially in a place where you have not only are there so many uncommitted prospects that Texas is interested in, that they're fighting for, but there are pretty good numbers from other schools as well. I mean, just thinking off the top of my head for A&M, you've got the recently recommitted Ekanola Ogunbiyi. Wow, I nailed that name.
Wow.
You've got Jalen Jones from Cibolo Steel.
Wow, I can't believe you did that. Go ahead.
You got Troy Omir. I probably butchered that one, though. And you've got the best wide receiver this cycle, without a doubt, and Williams David inside Texas. I know you're listening. I probably am about to butcher this one too. Demon Demas, Damon Demas. You have to tell me which one it is. There's going to be some good players from other schools here, and it may not be super easy for Texas to build buzz at this event, without, you know, big buzzworthy names going to this event. So, it would have been a lot better for Texas had they had several, maybe more commits. I'm not exactly sure who you would try to make that happen with, or who you might try to bump off their timeline in order to do that. But going into an important July of recruiting, where Texas, you know, feels like there's some stuff that could definitely drop their way, only having three guys who are not some of the most elite talents at this event there for Texas, I don't think is a very big positive for the Longhorns in this event. Now, Logan Parr, coming back, I believe, from a high ankle sprain that he suffered on the first day of spring ball, I'm going to be excited to see how he works out there. He's probably going to be playing left guard for O'Connor this season. So, we're going to see him working against defensive tackles most likely. I bet you could say the same for Jake Majors. I'm excited to see how Hudson Card fares in the passing game. I mean, we know that Lake Travis has a, you know, very timing oriented offense, but they also have a lot of the Tom Herman offense with Will Stein there, former Texas Quality Control and current Lake Travis offensive coordinator. So, we'll see what happens in the passing game with him, if he's able to build any sort of connection with any sort of the wide receivers there, and maybe find out one of those receivers wants to play with him. But I'm excited to see what happens with the Texas commits there. I think they will fare well. I don't think they will fare spectacularly. But I could definitely be surprised on that front. And, you know, it's always just a fun event. It's kind of a recruiting industry, conference, unofficial conference. You get so many guys from the 247s, from the rivals, even a few from the ESPNs and some other independent sites like you and I work for that show up there. And it's just a really phenomenal event. Get to meet a lot of, you know, great kids there that from around the country that don't normally get to, we don't normally get to get FaceTime with at Texas. It's one I'm always excited for. I'm not really particularly big on walking around the Cowboys stuff because that does absolutely nothing for me. But I know there are plenty of people that are excited for that.
Yeah, it kind of pisses me off because Jerry Jones is one of the reasons the Rams are now in L.A., but I'll, you know, whatever. We won't get into that. But yeah, again, getting guys like Demond DeMoss talking to Vernon Broughton and Princely Umemyelen. I did not get that right.
Umemyelen.
Guys like that, or Jalen Jones, or Akinola Ogbu, whatever his name is. God, I can't. Troy O'Meara. Those guys talking to guys who Texas really wants, not great. Not great, honestly. But I'm interested in seeing if Jake Majors and Logan Parr can really improve on their camp settings. Because I'll be honest, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. They didn't look great in their last camp settings when I saw them. They kind of struggled, honestly. But Hudson Card really dazzled in his camp settings. So I'm interested in seeing how far he goes in that Elite 11. I think he has a chance to really make a name for himself here at this Elite 11, and I'm excited to see him do it.
Yeah, and then in addition to those committed names, there's definitely some uncommitted names that Texas is looking out for. Defensive back Xavien Alford from Shadow Creek. Vernon Broughton, obviously the big-time defensive lineman from Cy Ridge. Zach Evans, everybody knows who Zach Evans is.
Who?
Justin Flo from Upland, California, one of the few 2021s that get invited to this. Donovan Jackson from Episcopal High School down in Bel Air. Some of the other committed guys that Texas definitely is going to keep an eye on. Some of the uncommitted guys that Texas is definitely looking at, committed or uncommitted, Jace McClellan, Lathan Ransom, Jahari Rogers from Arlington High, Princely Umemyelen, who you previously mentioned, Johnny Wilson, who we just talked about, but also Lyneth Whitehead from Athens, Georgia will be there. So just because there's only three Texas commits there doesn't mean that there's some Texas intrigue and storylines going on here. There'll be plenty of committed and uncommitted prospects interested in Texas for us to reach out to and get a little bit better grasp on their recruitment straight from them.
Right. The storyline will be beyond those, just seeing, okay, hey, without a lot of Texas cheerleading, how big is the Texas pride going into this with guys like Johnny Wilson, with guys like Lyneth Whitehead, with guys, you know, Princely Umemyelen and Jahari Rogers and stuff like that. We'll see how it plays out here. The next thing on our docket here is something that it's a little political, but it's something that's going to be really important for the entire college sporting world in general, because this Fair Pay to Play Act coming out of the California Senate, it recently passed one of their bigger committees and seems like it's on the fast track to becoming a law. We've seen the NCAA try to stop it, but really, it's something that needs to be talked about because it is going to change the college landscape one way or the other. Joe, I know you've seen it. It's been all over Twitter. It's been all over Reddit. It's been all over everywhere in the college world that California is really trying to take some steps here.
Yeah, and it's not the first time they've tried to take some steps in the athletic sphere, but this one definitely has pretty much only to do with athletics, and so I'm happy to discuss it. But yeah, definitely giving players access to, you know, the benefits that come from their own image and likeness is something that's been at the forefront of college football in the past few years.
Right.
Having over the table payments available for this, you know, for guys to I don't know if this would allow them to, you know, go to what In-N-Out. Let's use a California example here. Go to In-N-Out and be like, "Hi, I am JT Daniels. Go to In-N-Out." I don't have much of a problem with that. But you know, you obviously have read up a lot more than I have on this. Is that kind of what this bill is doing? Is that something that you're for in the current college football landscape?
Well, yeah, I mean, so basically, this bill in the California State Senate, it's if it passes, it would basically mandate that colleges that receive an average of $10 million a year in media rights revenue give their student athletes a chance to earn compensation derived from the use of their names, images, and likenesses. This is a big step against the NCAA, and if it does happen, it will be put in place in 2023. The California State Senate said, hey, this thing probably is going to happen, and you guys have, 4 years to get ready for it. And really, if you want to dig down deep into this, what it actually does, what this bill actually does, is it takes a leaf out of the Ed O'Bannon case against the NCAA. And a lot of people, when they hear Ed O'Bannon, it's like, God, that's the guy who took away my video games. Right? That's what
that's
I thought
valid,
immediately.
But
right?
More important stuff came from this trial.
Exactly. What California is trying to do is they're trying to force colleges in California to treat the student athletes along the lines that were envisioned by Ed O'Bannon's win, or I don't know, quote unquote win, in the case against the NCAA that he made. This means they'd be able to join advertising campaigns, sign endorsement deals, negotiate for inclusion in video games, and sign countless other types of licensing contracts. And by the way, going back to the video games, it was the NCAA that decided not to let the video games happen, not Ed O'Bannon. Back to what I was talking about. Another big change that would come from this bill is it would enable players the ability to hire agents to represent them. It also isn't explicitly stated. Okay, Joe, I just said it would give them the ability to hire agents to represent them. So,
right.
Another thing that isn't explicitly stated in the bill, but the judge that presided over the Ed O'Bannon case envisioned for the system that California is trying to put in, is a system of trusts whereby athletes would be credited money for their commercial use of their images. So after they leave college, they can access the money that they earned during college, thereby sort of enabling amateurism to stay alive. It doesn't turn these student athletes into any type of employee, contractor, or literally anything of the sort. So there's no salaries, no stipends, or anything like that. That's what this bill does at a very high level.
Yeah, so at this point, this kind of seems pie in the sky-y to me, not only because it's involving the NCAA, which is the most unreliable governing body I've ever dealt with in any sort of professional level, but, you know, California is, not to get too political, but they often do a lot of stuff that just is kind of, you know, hey, we want to do this. We're going to do this. And then it just, you know, fails to have any teeth. Is this something that actually seems like it could be possible, you know, within the college sports landscape in the next few years?
Oh, yeah. I completely understand what you're talking about. I mean, California is the type of government that's like, hey, we're going to try to push for change here. We're going to try to be the first people to take a change, whether or not that's absolutely ridiculous or not, whatever the type of change they're trying to make. And, you know, based on your political ideology, it could be ridiculous one way or the other. Anyways, but this bill was initially introduced on February 4th, right? So not that long ago in terms of politics here. In the last month, it was passed by the California Senate by a vote of 31-5. So almost unanimous. The five who voted against it were Republicans, but still a majority of Republicans voted for this. So there's bipartisan support for it on both sides. The thing that this proposal has to pass two more committees before it goes to the governor. Most experts I'm reading are suggesting that this road is going to be fairly smooth and the governor will likely sign this bill. So it looks like it's happening. But the NCAA is trying all they can do to lobby California and stop it. They're trying. I mean, Mark Emmert, there's one of the big news items, right? Mark Emmert, the guy, the president of the NCAA, sent a letter to California. I mean, I think people have read it. If you haven't, it's worth a read. Lobbying for them to postpone the vote, urging them that as the NCAA gets feedback from a working group that they formed back in May when they started to hear about this, to contemplate changes to the NCAA's rule that prohibit, you know, these athletes profiting from their images. And this is interesting development, the working group, because the NCAA, as you said, isn't really known for, you know, pushing for progress and reform, especially not on this matter. It would likely be better, honestly, in the end, if they took over and really started to make some of these changes that allowed stuff California is trying to push the NCAA into. Because if they do, it would keep the NCAA, one, it would strengthen the NCAA a lot, and two, it would keep...
screw this, Dan.
Right. But it would make it so that there's the level playing field that there sort of is right now, where, hey, they're all held to a rule and the government is not meddling in this. They've done it before. They've had this before for the non-major sports, the Olympic sports. They have an Olympic model where they allow outside sources to pay athletes while schools continue to pay for only the tuition, board, room, and board. They've done this before. So, you know, I don't see them really doing much. But if they were to give them the rights to their image, I feel like this would be the best thing. But honestly, I think this is just a ploy to kick this down the road by doing what they normally do when they get into these huge legal battles by appeasing the opposition, right? I mean, they've done
exactly.
That
I think you kind of mentioned this. Like, this is going to be something that's going to be hard to enforce. It's really not going to have a whole ton of teeth. And I know I love using that phrase, but I really think that's the case. Like, this isn't going to be something to where, you know, it's this might be just something that only California passes. And if not, you know, maybe another state or two passes it, but it won't be one that's home to a major P5 school, and it really won't have that much effect. But I think what this does show, and I think you definitely brought this up, is that we're really starting to get more active in this conversation about, like, okay, how do we let student athletes, you know, not only maintain the what's the right word here? The allure, the legitimacy, the appeal, you know, the splendor, it's a weird word for it, but the splendor of amateur athleticism, but also not be caught up in being a, you know, a mindless pawn in this multi-billion dollar industry.
Right.
And I think this is kind of like, this is a step. This is not the step for it, but this is a step for it. And I think it's, you know, part of the process of figuring out what's the right way to do this as we go down the road. Now, do I trust the California state legislature, governor's office, all that stuff to be the one that properly determines this? No, not at all. Do I, same question this time towards the NCAA? No, not at all. But at some point, I think the stakeholders here, whether it's athletic directors, whether it's, you know, former student athletes who are heavily invested in how current student athletes go, they're going to use these type of opportunities, these type of bills to bring up the conversation with it and to start to figure out how they can properly, you know, make sure that amateur athleticism keeps the traits about it that so many people love about amateur athleticism, whether it's representation of school, whether it's, you know, quote, love of the game, that type of thing. While also, you know, you've got these kids who are, while also being able to allow kids who are playing, you know, on ESPN, on Fox, on CBS, networks paying millions, possibly even billions of dollars, but tens of millions of dollars to, you know, individual schools just to have those games on television. I think this is the right step to finding some sort of middle ground and figuring out where we need to go with this. But right. I don't think this is the step that needs to be taken. The entity that needs to decide it, onto that next step, but it's definitely a step forward.
Right. And honestly, I think if it's not the NCAA, it needs to be at the federal level. And luckily there are already, from my research, a slew of proposals in Congress that are looking to do sort of the same thing here, including One, I think that was put in by South Carolina, if I remember, that would recategorize the NCAA to be a nonprofit, which, you know, short story, would permit student athletes the ability to access their identities and use those identities, much like this California law would allow.
And to bring this all the way back to Texas, I think that bill was the one that Sam Ellinger tweeted about earlier this offseason, you know, talking about, and if not, he definitely, you know, brought to light on social media something very similar, you know, about this being very close to a full-time job, spending X amount of hours per week doing this, in addition to all the responsibilities thrown upon him as a student. No matter what you think about this, the time and dedication that it takes for a student athlete to be a student athlete is enormous. It's something I didn't have to deal with. It's something that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. I know you definitely were big on the lacrosse. Gosh, this sounds belittling. I'm not trying to be belittling. but, you know, you played a sport in college for a little bit. Kinda. You know how long it takes. You know what the dedication it takes even for, was it club at Wash U?
Yep.
You know what the type of dedication it takes for even a club sport. Imagine being a varsity athlete for football in a football crazy state. You know, it's definitely difficult. And so this is just a step. And like I mentioned, bring it all to Texas. This is something that Sam Ellinger, you know, current golden child for Texas fans, to be quite honest, has even brought up. And you know, if you go through any sort of, you know, Texas website at that point, go through Twitter and find Texas fans, there are some people telling Sam Ellinger, like, no, you've got this wrong, kiddo. And there are some people telling him, like, you know what? Good for you. You're taking a stand for what you believe in. So it's a very divisive issue, but I think you're right on in that in the next few years, we're going to see it all come to a head. And this may be one of the first, you know, this little bill may be one of the first steps to really bringing the conversation into, you know, bringing progress to it and bringing an actual solution to it.
Right, but hell if the NCAA is going to let that happen. Emmerich also warned the California Senate that if they were to go through with this bill, California schools would be banned from championships because they could not ensure a level playing field. Now, I mean, I kind of understand that, honestly. There's going to be a massive recruiting advantage for California, not just in football, not just in basketball or in baseball. It's going to be in every sport. It's going to affect every single sport. So Cal Berkeley Tennis can say, hey, you can either go to Cal or Pepperdine, actually. I think they're a good tennis place. Pepperdine can say, hey, you can come to Pepperdine.
Private, though. Private, though.
Still, I mean, they're going to be held or at least have the ability to do this. They can say, hey, you can come to California and be able to use your image, or you can go to Texas and get absolutely nothing. So there's honestly some reason behind this, but from what I've read, according to Forbes's Mark Edelman, this is an empty threat. The ban would violate an antitrust act, the Sherman Antitrust Act, which if you're big into U.S. history, you'll know the importance of it, because it helps lay out free trade principles. So this, if they were to do that, if they were to ban them, it would basically be seen as wage fixing and illegal concerted refusal to deal by punishing California colleges for complying with state law. So, you know, it would be very illegal to do this, but also on the other side of the aisle for NCAA, they could argue that what California is doing goes against the Constitution by unduly interfering with interstate commerce, as the rule would pose a serious wave in the economies for other states, which, I mean, it is very, very much laid out in the Constitution is unconstitutional. So this could go all the way to the Supreme Court. It has that potential to do that. It's an incredibly, that's just one of the repercussions that could happen from this little law that's happening right now in California State Senate.
Good old, you know, Benjamin Harrison back in 1890 probably didn't know that his this bill he signed into law from the Ohio congressman, the Sherman of the Sherman Antitrust, or excuse me, Ohio Senator John Sherman, famously for the Sherman Antitrust Act, he probably had no clue that Cal and Stanford football would be affected by this bill that he past, man, what, I mean.
Was football even a thing? Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah, oh,
hell yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was. Yeah, you're right.
Ask your local Princeton grad if football was a thing back in 1890. But at 11:38 on a Thursday, I can't really tell if, you know what? Just never mind. I'm going to stop talking. Just cut out that 11:38.
No, it's fine. But you're right.
I tried
right,
to make a joke about Big Ten, and it failed miserably. And I don't know anything about Ben Harrison's presidency. So,
but on top of that repercussion, there are a multitude of other repercussions, and most importantly is this is all setting up for a huge change in college athletic and landscape as we know it, because the California Senate is giving the NCAA until 2023 to comply or figure out what the heck they're going to do for this law, which will probably become something if the NCAA doesn't do anything. You know what else is happening around that time? In 2024? All the big conferences, all of their TV contracts are coming to a close. So that's big for the NCAA because there's a very real possibility that a conference like the SEC is like, hey, you know what? Screw the NCAA. We're going to go make our own conference with blackjack and hookers.
Hey, that's what happened in the Premier League 20 years ago, I think. All the top 20 teams broke off. It's like, huh, later, we're going to go get our own TV money.
Exactly.
So could be a similar situation, but I think a lot of that right now is preliminary.
Right. This is just another huge thing that's going to be piled on top of the coming years of 2023, 2024, and 2025. What is the NCAA going to do? What is going to happen to the NCAA in general? Will it survive? Will it even survive? Could NCAA as we know it today be completely different, be an absolutely unrecognizable entity than it is today? Doesn't even exist. This is setting up all to come to a head around that time period. But if you want to look at something more contemporary that could happen, you know, is happen right now that is less game-changing, it's still a little bit of game-changing, but this could provide for more incentive for athletes to actually stay in college. I mean, look no further than little Jordan Humphrey.
Exactly.
Think about it. One of the main reasons he leaves is because he wants to go get money. He thinks he's not making money right now in college, and this is when he can go and make money. And if he's making money in college, if he's making good money in college right now, does he leave Texas for the NFL and not get drafted? No. It probably actually helps out Texas quite a bit and keeps players in the NCAA for a little bit longer. It would help out the NCAA. And on the other side, it would help out women's sports quite a bit because their professional leagues aren't all that profitable. I know it's not probably the politically correct thing to say, but it's a fact. You look at the wages in the WNBA versus the NBA. They're not even comparable. So allowing them, women's tennis, men's tennis, or women's, swimming and diving, men's swimming and diving, to start making money immediately and profit on some of the time where their skill set, their specific skill set, actually is marketable, could be huge. Could be huge for women and for all of these other sports that aren't quite as profitable as football, basketball, and baseball. And the last two things, the last two really big repercussions that I can think of off the top of my head are obviously the recruiting advantages that this would give to California. If this were to go down, let's say, hey, in a vacuum, California passes this, 2023 comes, the NCAA is what we know it to be, no other states have done anything, the federal law hasn't done anything, California passes this. I think this would cause sort of an avalanche effect. California is going to have recruiting advantages. I already laid them out. Come to California and use your image, or go to Alabama and deal with whatever the hell Alabama has. So basically, what's to stop another state, like, let's say Alabama, from saying, yeah, okay, you can have your image, and we're also going to enforce our schools to pay you to give Alabama some sort of an advantage. And then what's to stop Mississippi from taking another step forward and taking another step forward? And then all of a sudden you have all of these governments, you know, fighting over and severely changing the landscape of football through politics. There's no longer a level playing field. It is all, okay, which government cares more about college football, right? So if this doesn't take that step to the federal level and make it one level playing field, the NCAA doesn't do that, then these recruiting advantages are going to be playing out on the political scale.
Gosh, that's lame.
I know, right?
Ugh.
And then finally, the underbelly of recruiting is going to change. Because right now, we know what the underbelly of recruiting is. It is trainers. It is quote-unquote family members. It is those back alley dealings where the schools put the money in the gym shorts and the tickets that are already paid for with the hotel receipts and give it to a trainer who gives it to a player who gives it to another player, blah, 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 and all of a sudden, wow, you know, this guy committed here. That's what happens. It's the underbelly. We know it's happening. If you don't think it's happening, if you think the game of recruiting is completely clean, then you are just lying to yourself. But if you do this, if you exchange, you know, give players the rights to do this and you try to make it all above table and give them the ability to use agents, that creates a new underbelly where agents are the underbelly here. And you're like, well, hey, it's agents like the NBA where, hey, they're in meddling like they do with the head coaches and the NBA and all that type of stuff. No, no, no. Listen to this. Let's say I'm an agent and you're a five-star recruit and you're looking for a place to go. And I'm like, hey, you know what? If you go to Alabama, I can get you a really, really good deal with this TV advertising deal over here and a Nike deal. But if you go to Alabama, I can do that. Or this agent over here that's getting some back alley money from Oregon and saying, hey, you know, if you go to Oregon, I can get you an even better deal with Nike and such and such and such and such. And that's that sets up for, because there's always going to be an underbelly here. There's an underbelly for every sport out there. So that's kind of the trade-off you have here. So it's sort of, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? I kind of explained it to Joe. It's like art. It's in the eye of the beholder whether or not you think one underbelly is better than the other. It's just, you know, you had the pros and cons here.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this type of thing, if it becomes common, it's going to definitely change how recruiting goes down and, well, you know, what becomes the shady side of it. So that's definitely – sounds like an unintended consequence that whoever passed these laws didn't really think about, which, oh man, what a shock.
Yeah, I know. This always seems to be the case, right? Hey, politicians come bring up a law and then, oh man, there's this unintended consequence that happens. Oh, who would have thought of that, everybody? But I think that's all the rambling I can do. I think it's all the rambling that Joe and you, the listener, can deal with. So I think we're going to end off there. I think that's going to be your fourth and five. This has been your Longhorn Nation podcast. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or at texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. And my main man, Joe Cook, where can we find you, bud?
You can find me at JosephCook89. You can find me on InsideTexas.com as well.
You guys can find both of us and our other shows, our other episodes, on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, and anywhere you can find a podcast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next week. Welcome.